eKatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into Hollywood, but maybe not the Hollywood you're thinking of. Forget the red carpets for a minute.
Yeah, we're not talking about Oscar speeches.
No, we're looking at the work of Peter DeCherney to see Hollywood as this incredibly complex and honestly resilient industrial system.
That's the key, right? It's a shift in perspective. Most of us see Hollywood as art, you know, was the movie good? But DeCherney makes you see it as a global engine of power.
And it matters because it's arguably America's biggest cultural export. It shapes how the world sees the U.S.
Fundamentally, it's art, it's commerce, and it's definitely politics, all rolled into one.
So our mission today is kind of like industrial archaeology. We're digging past the celebrities to find the machinery underneath, the business deals, the legal fights, the whole blueprint that built Hollywood's dominance.
And our guide for this is Peter DeCherney. He's a professor of cinema studies and English at the University of Pennsylvania.
What I find so interesting about him is that he's not your typical film historian focused on, you know, camera angles or something.
Right.
He looks at cultural policy, the contracts, the court cases, the regulations.
Exactly. He gives you this systems level view. When you read his work, you realize the real story isn't about one star or one movie. It's about copyright law. It's about market forces.
It's the why the industry works the way it does.
And that's all built on its institutional framework, not just its ability to make a hit movie.
Okay, so let's get into his main argument.
Right.
He says calling Hollywood just entertainment is, well, way too simple. It's really an industrial system designed for one thing, survival.
Perpetual survival. And its core insight, the reason it's dominated for a century, is its ability to adapt.
How so?
Well, the business model is basically designed to find any threat, technology, lawsuits, anything, and then absorb it, and then monetize it.
So every crisis is just a new business opportunity.
Every single one. Think about the panic when TV came along, or VCRs. Everyone said, this is the end of Hollywood. But it never was. It just forced them to find a new way to make money from the threat.
It's a history of constant reinvention, but always on their own terms. And DeCherney traces this all the way from the early days through World War II, where film was propaganda, right up to the streaming wars we're seeing now.
And the common thread is always this tension between art, money, and political power. It's less about who directed a film and more about who owned the distribution rights.
Let's dig into that. The Golden Age, so the 1920s to the 50s. The core of the system was something called vertical integration.
Yes. The ultimate factory setup, it was an assembly line for dreams.
Run by the big five studios.
Right. MGM, Paramount, Warner Brothers. They didn't just make the movies. They controlled the entire economic life cycle of a film.
And they were breaks down into three parts, right?
Absolutely. First, you have production. They owned the lots, the cameras, and they had all the talent, actors, directors locked into these long-term contracts.
So they owned the creators.
Then second was distribution. They controlled the networks that physically shipped the film cans out to theaters.
And third, the real moneymaker, exhibition.
That's the one. They owned the most important first-run theaters in all the big cities.
So they had a guaranteed place to show their own movies.
Yeah.
It was basically a perfect monopoly. They could force independent theaters to take a bunch of their bad films just to get the one blockbuster.
It was brilliant risk management. But that whole fortress came crashing down in 1948, the Paramount Decree.
A Supreme Court antitrust case.
Yep. It forced the studios to sell their theaters. And that was the first huge shock to the system. It completely shattered that assembly line and made them rethink everything.
But even before that, they'd already mastered another form of control, which was self-regulation, the Hays Code.
This is one of my favorite parts of his analysis because it seems so counterintuitive.
Right. Why would a business want to censor itself?
Because in the 20s and 30s, there was this huge public outcry about Hollywood being immoral. And the threat of government censorship was very, very real.
So the studios panicked.
No, they were strategic. They figured, look, if the government steps in, the rules will be random and we'll have no control. So they created the Hays Code to police themselves.
So they basically told Congress, we've got this.
Exactly. It calmed down the moral crusaders. It made sure their movies could play in the most conservative towns. And most importantly, it kept the government out of their business. They kept control.
They gave up some creative freedom for guaranteed market access. It's all about the survival of the system.
And that same logic applied to the star system. Stars weren't artists. They were industrial assets, commodities.
Their main job was branding.
pure branding. A name like Clark Gable or Marilyn Monroe pre-sold a movie around the world. It lowered the financial risk of making these huge films.
And even after the Paramount decree break up the contract system and stars could demand huge salaries,
their function stayed the same. They were still the face of the brand, the marketing vehicle.
Which became even more important when the next threat showed up, technology.
It's a pattern that just repeats. Every new invention, sound, TV, cable, VCRs, is greeted with headlines like, Hollywood is dead.
But it just absorbs the new tech. The VCR is the perfect example.
Oh, absolutely. The industry's first reaction was total panic. They saw home taping as pure piracy. They actually sued the VCR manufacturers in the famous Betamax case.
They tried to kill the technology.
And then they had this light bulb moment. They realized they could make a fortune by licensing their old movies for people to rent and buy.
And home video became a massive new revenue stream.
Massive. For two decades, it was a multi-billion dollar goldmine. They turned the thing they feared most into a huge source of profit.
So if you fast forward to today, streaming is just the latest version of that story.
It's the exact same playbook. Netflix and Amazon show up as disruptors, but what are they doing now?
They're acting like old Hollywood studios.
They're spending billions on blockbusters. They're creating their own stars, building franchises. The system just co-opts its challengers.
And as the technology went global, the market did too. Today, the foreign box office is everything.
It's way more than the domestic box office for almost any big movie, and that reality actually shapes the content of the films themselves.
Right, because you need something that plays everywhere.
Exactly. So you get a heavy reliance on visual spectacle, CGI, big action sequences.
Simple themes.
Universal themes like heroism or family. Things that don't need a lot of translation. A big explosion looks the same in any language.
A quiet, dialogue-heavy drama just doesn't travel as well.
And the ultimate case study for this is China. To get access to that huge market, Hollywood has to navigate government censorship. They'll literally change plots or casting to make sure a film gets approved.
So it's like a new geopolitical haze code.
That's a perfect way to put it. Commercial needs are once again driving content regulation.
So if you boil all this history down, what are the big repeating lessons here?
I think theme number one is just adaptation as the engine of survival. Hollywood's real genius isn't just artistic, it's industrial. It's this ability to see any disruption as a catalyst for the next business model.
That's a huge lesson for any business, really.
Wow,
so many industries fight change. Hollywood's model is to absorb it and sell it.
Then the second theme is about its cultural impact. Hollywood as the American mythology factory. These films don't just show us American culture. They actively create the templates for it.
They give us the stories we use to understand ourselves,
mm-hmm.
like the classic Western or...
Or the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
These narratives about self-reliance, the search for home, they become the shorthand for the American dream.
Understanding those stories helps you decode the culture itself.
And the third theme is this constant tension between art and commerce. We tend to think of that as a bad thing, but Duchernay shows that the pressure to be commercially successful often forces innovation.
Right. It forces them to get better at technology, at storytelling, at engaging an audience, because they have to.
Those constraints can actually lead to creativity. It's what made American films so appealing to the whole world.
Duchernay has some great lines that really capture all of this.
He really does. He's got a knack for summarizing these huge ideas.
There's this one I love. Hollywood doesn't just reflect American culture. It creates the templates through which Americans understand themselves and their place in the world.
Yeah, that really gets at how proactive it is. It's not a mirror, it's a mold.
And for the business side, there's this. Every technological disruption that threatened to destroy Hollywood instead forced it to reinvent itself, becoming stronger and more influential in the process.
That's the whole story in one sentence. It's that pragmatic, relentless adaptation.
He also doesn't shy away from the downside. He has this idea that Hollywood's global influence represents both America's greatest cultural achievement and its most problematic form of cultural imperialism.
Which is such a good way to put it. It captures that complexity. It's both a spreader of ideals and a potential steamroller of local cultures.
And finally, this one gets to the core of its power. The real measure of Hollywood success is not box office receipts, but its ability to make audiences around the world care about American stories and American dreams.
It's about creating an emotional connection. That's the product.
Okay, so let's make this practical. What can you, our listener, actually do with all of this information?
Well, the first takeaway is just critical consumption, media literacy. Once you see the industrial blueprint under the movie, you become a much more conscious viewer.
You start to see why certain stories are told a certain way.
Exactly. You can spot the implicit messages about gender or power or success that are there to serve the commercial needs of the system.
And for anyone in business, there's a huge takeaway here: disruption management.
For sure. Hollywood's history is a masterclass in how to handle existential threats. The lesson is, stop fighting the new thing and figure out how to co-opt it. License it, buy it, make it part of your business.
And the third takeaway is about geopolitics, understanding soft power.
Right. When you watch a blockbuster, you're not just watching a movie, you're watching a piece of American cultural diplomacy. Understanding how those stories shape the world's view of the U.S. is vital.
So, wrapping up, what was the biggest surprise for you in all of this?
For me, it was really crystallizing the idea that the Hays Code was a brilliant business move. You always hear about it as this quirky, moralistic thing, but seeing it as a cold, calculated strategy to maintain market control was a real aha moment.
Yeah, that was huge for me too. And just the sheer genius of the vertical integration system, it was so airtight. A truly perfect machine for making money.
I think the biggest lesson for me is that the glamour is all a distraction. The real power isn't on the screen. It's in the legal contracts, the distribution deals, and this incredible 100-year history of adaptation. The machine is the star.
A machine built for perpetual survival that just keeps shaping how we all see the world.
Whether we realize it or not.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.